What makes it great? That's a question composer and author Rob Capello has been asking about pieces of music for years, on NPR and elsewhere. He points out that when we're listening to a song, for example, it's crucial to understand that once the words are set to music, their meaning is completely transformed. In a song, words no longer have a purely verbal meaning, and music no longer has a purely musical meaning. At every moment, the music means something in the context of the words that it would not mean by itself. And each word means something in the context of its musical setting that it could not mean by itself. Once music and words join forces, it is the combination that is meaningful. And when it is combined in a great way, it is the combination that is magical. Trombonist Ryan Caberly calls this song perfect. Perfect as a song and in its rendering.
Oh, Madalena, o meu peito percebeu que o mar é uma gota comparado ao pranto meu. Fique certo quando nosso amor desperta, logo o sol se desespera e se esconde lá na serra.
The song is Madalena by Brazilian composer Ivan Lins. And Elis Regina is the vocalist singing words by Ronaldo Monteiro de Souza. Not just perfect, but for Caberly, it is magical, a quality he strives for as a trombonist. He tells us he works to play his instrument as if it were his voice, and when he performs songs by Ivan Lins, he is the trombonist who is actually the singer of the song without words. And for Ryan Caberly, music is every bit a language as the words we speak are. And one of his gifts that allows him to communicate so much and so richly when he plays the trombone is his remarkable ear. He credits growing up in a musical household for that. And his deeper and deeper engagement with the music of Brazil, listening closely and deeply, has allowed him to perform such music in rich and complex ways, creating music that has become not only a conversation between and among his bandmates, but between the varied and intricate music of Brazil and his native language, American jazz. And the results are so fresh and so meaningful. And we go back to Capello's word, magical. There will be a night of Brazilian jazz featuring Ryan Caberly's Colectivo do Brasil this Friday, September 26th, at the Cooperage Project, Main Street in Honesdale. And we had a chance to speak by phone with Ryan before that concert. And we began by asking him about the way the sounds of Brazilian music made their way to the States. Considering most folks only know about João Gilberto and Ipanema.
I think that's one of the reasons that this project feels important to me, because I think the short answer to your question is beyond the Bossa Nova movement, which João Gilberto and his wife Astrid Gilberto, via the American musician Stan Getz and the guitarist Bird.
Oh, yes, Charlie Bird.
You know, that was really the extent that most Americans and even more astute jazz audiences were aware of Brazilian music. And the reason for that, from what I understand, is that Brazil is, first of all, a huge country, one of the largest countries in the world, population and geographically speaking. It's almost 200 million people nowadays. So given the population, and then combine that with the cultural love for music and dance, much more so than it is here in the U.S., I think. A lot of the musicians, a lot of the music that has been made there since the Bossa Nova craze had no reason to be exported. They didn't need American audiences and American commercialism, nor did they really need European audiences, although some wound up in Europe during the military dictatorship of Brazil. But that's a different story. But all that to say, a lot of this music that I've been drawing inspiration from was actually very hard to find. In fact, a lot of it is not available even on our streaming services here in the U.S., and I really had to do some deep digging on YouTube and or buying out-of-print CDs or vinyl just to listen to this music and learn from it. So I think that by and large, folks like myself who have fallen in love with Brazilian music that is beyond the scope of what most of us know from the bossa nova craze, I think most of us have gone to Brazil. That's how we came across this music and its people and its culture.
And what's interesting to me is the last time we spoke, Ryan, we had a good discussion about your sense of music as a language. And so you were growing up with music in your ears, and you said you developed a good ear, and that as a language, you have to immerse yourself. So did you have enough time to immerse yourself when you were in Brazil?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're learning a language, it's not that you can only learn it when you're immersed in it. You can certainly learn a lot from, you know, to use a verbal language analogy, from textbooks, from teachers, online classes, from friends. But in order to get to that next level of fluency in terms of colloquialisms and slang words and different accents within a particular region of the country, and not just conversationally, but, you know, say getting into vocabulary so that you can discuss more sophisticated topics like science or politics, you know, this requires time spent amongst people who are fluent. So for me, it was a combination of time spent in Brazil, an enormous amount of time listening to records, recorded music, but also, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be based in the New York City jazz community, even though I now live in the Sullivan County Catskills. For 20 years, I was based in the New York City jazz scene and still work down there on a weekly basis. And there is a vibrant Brazilian musical community in the New York City area as well. So I'm also able to continue to learn to speak these Brazilian musical languages without having to go to Brazil every time. But with that being said, I'm still going down there regularly. In fact, I had two separate trips to Brazil just in the month of June alone, this past June. So I still very much recognize the value of those in-person visits.
And what about as a musician, what about knowing that the melody you're playing, say it's a choro or whatever, you collect it and you can hear the rhythm as the musicians there play it, and you can pick it up, the subtleties. But is it important also to you, maybe not to others, but to you, to know from where that emerged as a cultural reflection of the society or the people?
Yeah, for me, it's very important. You know, one of my jobs over the last, really my whole adult life, has been teaching at a public university in New York, at Hunter College. And one of my duties has always been to teach jazz history. And I think through that time spent building curriculum and grading quizzes and whatnot, doing the lectures, I've gained a very, very deep appreciation for the history of our different musical styles. And so when I'm coming at learning the music of a particular artist, as we did for our new album, which is all inspired by the great living singer-songwriter of Brazil, Ivan Lins, the backstory, the kind of social, tangentially related social backstories, personal life, all these things to me are intertwined with the music of that person, and therefore certainly can help me become more, I don't know if fluent's the right word, but just more familiar with where that music came from and what it was meant to convey at the time. And that way, when, you know, we're not playing by and large this music exactly as it was played originally, we're looking to put our own personal stamp on it. For me, that means bringing my American jazz personality and language into the mix. So, you know, I'm now telling my own story using the music of these classic Brazilian composers but I still very much value understanding what that music was meant to convey in its original form.
Tell us about the fact that you have chosen to center an album around Ivan, this important person to you and to Brazil.
Yes, well, Ivan Lins is arguably the most important living songwriter of Brazil. And his first big hit was over 50 years ago. He's been around a long time. He started when he was quite young, and he now just turned 80 years old. Was written for perhaps the most famous Brazilian singer in history, Elis Regina, and that song was called Madalena. So if you want to start somewhere, both as an introduction to his music, but also historically in his discography, start with Elis Regina's recording of Madalena. It is an stunning track. It's perfect. It's like 2.5 minutes long, and it takes you on the most thrilling musical journey with highs and lows and so much drama and just full orchestra accompaniment. But for me, you know, for each of this is our third album now that my band Collective do Brasil and myself have done. It's not just about the music. It's really specifically about the songwriting. And I'm a real student of songwriting. I know you and I talked about that in our last chat a bit. And Ivan Lins is maybe the most sophisticated of songwriters that we've tackled yet. And in particular, his ability to utilize jazz harmony, very sophisticated harmony, chord changes that move through many different keys, but doing so in a very accessible kind of mainstream popular music way is an inspiring ability that I am very actively trying to learn more how to do in my own music. And so, you know, I did a deep dive into Ivan's discography. As I mentioned, he, through the 70s and 80s, was a pop star of Brazil, and his albums were being sold in the hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of copies during that period. And so some of them are very easy to find, but he effectively recorded on average one album every year for almost 50 years. So
Whoa. It
was a lot of music to get through. And like I said, as he kind of ebbed and flowed in his popularity, some of those albums are out of print or much harder to find. But I did my best to listen to everything he ever recorded and created a short list of maybe about 15 of my favorite songs. And then my bandmates and I whittled it down to our favorite 8. And then we all reimagined each a few of those songs. And that's what our audience will be listening to when we perform it this Friday at the Cooperage Project.
If they are indeed songs, then they are sung?
Well, that is an excellent question. They were originally sung. Yvonne is a singer, beautiful, beautiful voice, very influential voice, very unique, actually, compared to some of the other big singers of Brazil. And they also have, it's worth noting, absolutely poetic, poignant words, lyrics, really poems. He collaborated with a wonderful poet and lyricist of Brazil named Vitor Martins on much of his music that, you know, most American pop music, singing about your lost love, or, you know, how much you love your truck, or whatever it is, fairly menial topics. These songs are thinking about the meaning of life and just using the most beautiful symbolism. It's just incredible. And of course, I had to use a translator to glean a lot of that information. But that's also an important part of my process when learning this music. With all that being said, our band is an acoustic jazz quartet, and the melodies are played on trombone. And that's me. I'm a trombonist. So my job is really to try and capture the way in which Ivan sang this music with his voice, and try to convey that same kind of expressiveness and drama through the trombone, which is, you know, a cold hunk of metal when it comes down to it. So that's a big challenge for me, but one that I really enjoy.
But you do hit it sometimes, don't you?
Absolutely. I would hope to think I did. I mean, that's a big part of what the trombone's role in jazz history has been, an expressive kind of romantic melody instrument in the hands of people like Tommy Dorsey or Glenn Miller, or later into the jazz world, people like J.J. Johnson or Bill Watrous. It's always been known to be a very expressive instrument. So I'm leaning into that side of my instrument's history.
What about trombones in Brazil?
That's an excellent question. The reason I originally traveled to Brazil almost a decade ago now, I was on my first sabbatical from Hunter College, and I was attracted. I already enjoyed Brazilian music, but I knew it in a fairly superficial way. And what brought me down there originally was not the songwriting of Ivan, or, you know, we've also covered Edu Lobo, we've covered Milton Nascimento, but in fact was the trombone's role in Brazilian folk music. The trombone is almost a folk instrument of Brazil. It's found in the earliest samba bands, the earliest choro bands, as you mentioned, and other folkloric musics like frevo from the north. It all has a ton of brass instruments front and center, much like early jazz. And coincidentally, a lot of these styles were born around the same period of time, early 20th century. But the trombone, as you're, let's say, sitting in a restaurant in Sao Paulo or Rio, there's a very good chance you'll hear trombone in a background music restaurant band. And that is definitely not the case here in America in 2025. So I was attracted to that, and I wanted to learn more about why that was, and study with some of the folks who are doing that at a very high level down in Brazil. So yeah, there's some very important trombonists. One who just recently passed away, who actually, long before I ever tried to merge Brazilian music and jazz, was doing so. His name was Raul da Souza. He's one of the legends of the trombone in Brazil.
And Brian, we know that in certain cases, cultures have emotions that are hard to describe. Emotions are hard to describe, of course. Mm-hmm. But there's, for example, what with García Lorca or whatever, there's that, what, duende or whatever it is, there's that darkness that people can't describe, but you can play it in the music. Is there a Brazilian equivalent of some sort of emotion that maybe they recognize and we don't so much?
Yeah, there is actually. Funny enough, there's exactly that. They have a word called saudade, which you've definitely heard referenced if you've listened to any Brazilian music. They sing about it a lot. And we do not have an equivalent word. It's a close cousin to nostalgia, but it's specifically the nostalgia of missing something you love. And so oftentimes it's a saudade in reference to their country. I mean, Brazilians love their country. They're extremely nationalistic in that way. Or it could be saudade referencing a lost loved one, but it's this one word kind of emotional description that we don't really have one word for. And it's everywhere in the lyrics of Brazilian music. It's S-A-U-D-A-D-E, saudade.
There's that Portuguese there where we can't pronounce it.
Oh, it's so difficult. It's you know, I don't speak Spanish, but I can pronounce it. And you know, have grown up playing it with a ton of Spanish-speaking musicians and Spanish-style musics. And so that just makes it even harder because it's literally the opposite in many ways between Spanish and Brazilian Portuguese. So I'm slowly starting to be able to wrap my ears and my mouth muscles around the language. And then one of these days, it's on my bucket list to try to learn to speak some of the Portuguese language. You know, I'll never be able to speak it like I do the musical language that I'm very much fluent in, and I feel like I'm very much fluent in now.
Well, you talk very well about how you have taken very seriously and respected very seriously the music and musics of Brazil, but also that you have a desire to make it, in a sense, your own. You have an ensemble that is people you respect and are capable of having those conversations that you'd like to have. Introduce us to them.
Yes, well, that's such an important point to the story because, you know, I'm trying to speak Brazilian music fluently, but as an American jazz musician. So, of course, I speak many different jazz languages fluently. And the rest of my band is from Brazil. They all actually just arrived yesterday from Sao Paulo. And so they're coming at it from the opposite perspective. They are active Brazilian, professional Brazilian musicians who speak many different Brazilian musical styles fluently. And they're really spent their entire adult lives trying to learn to speak American jazz fluently. And they're slightly younger than me. They're all in their early 30s. So they're really part of the millennial internet generation. And so they grew up night after night getting to listen to the great jazz being played at Small's Jazz Club in New York City, which I didn't get to do when I was in high school or college. There wasn't music being streamed online at that point. And so via that opportunity, listening to these live streams, via listening to recordings, and then actually how I originally met them, by trying to take advantage of American musicians that would be passing through Brazil, they, all three of them, have learned to speak American jazz in very fluent, deeply fluent ways. In some ways, they do things with American jazz that many of my professional jazz friends in New York struggle to do. It's really incredible. And so although we're coming at it from opposite sides of the coin here, the end result is trying to create the same sound. Our goal is the same, to reimagine this classic Brazilian repertoire in a way that we feel is relevant to 21st century jazz, but also 21st century Brazilian music. And so the three of them I'll introduce now. The pianist is Felipe Silveira. He is one of the first people I got in touch with when I first went to Brazil on sabbatical. And he has a trio with the drummer, Paulinho Vicente, and a bassist who actually recorded on our first album but is no longer with us. He moved away. And the other special thing about this group is Felipe Silveira, the pianist, and Paulinho Vicente, the drummer, grew up together. And so they have a shared chemistry and shared musical language that only comes when musicians are performing, let's say, 3-4 nights a week for a decade. I mean, they have that kind of shared chemistry and trust. It's incredible. And then our bassist who joined us about 5 years ago when we were doing our second album is named Felipe Brissola, who's an absolute virtuoso acoustic bass player. So it's for me, it's, you know, I have three very active groups at the moment, and this might be my favorite because it's just everything feels so natural, feels so effortless, and the music we're trying to make, we have it all memorized. It's all acoustic. There's no outlets, no electric amplified instruments you have to plug in, no computers you have to worry about crashing on you. You know, it's very, very streamlined in that way, and we just walk onto the stage with our instruments, and we can play this beautiful music. So for me, it's, you know, we only get to play a couple of tours a year, but it's always the highlight of my year for sure.
And you called the group
Collective do Brasil, and do is like of. So yeah, it's the Brazilian collective, so to speak, Collective do Brasil.
And collective suggests that there's not a hierarchy.
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, there's not a hierarchy of musical influences. Both American jazz and Brazilian music is equally important to this project. There's not a hierarchy of band leader versus sidemen. All four of us are equally involved in the programming, the arrangements, the setting up of gigs, et cetera. So it really is a true collaboration, equally spread across the band.
Well, we'll close, if it's all right, with an area we touched on last time we spoke, Ryan, and that was the power of music in our lives, the importance and power of music. And you certainly spoke very passionately and wisely about that, and I'm sure you are even perhaps more convinced now.
Yeah, it was a very different world when we last spoke. And I think, I mean, just looking at the example that this band and our and Collective Bill Brazil's music can demonstrate the way that it can bring very, at least superficially, appearing different cultures together. I mean, actually, when you dig into Brazilian American culture, there are actually a lot of similarities. But if you had traveled to Brazil for the first time, you probably wouldn't feel that way. It feels like a very different place. And, you know, music is this equalizing force that allows us to communicate, to create new ideas because of the fact that we have differences, because we don't all come from the same place and share the same views. We are actually able to make even more beautiful and compelling music. And I think that's an important lesson that we all on both sides of the aisle here in America could learn from, myself included. Just trying to be, or perhaps be, slightly better listeners to those around us and to those we don't agree with, and looking to find compromise and looking to find common ground. I think jazz is an exceptional model of how that can work.
Ryan Keberle, trombonist, composer, and band leader, speaking with us in anticipation of a night of Brazilian jazz featuring his band, the Collective do Brasil. It's this Friday, September 26th, at the Cooperage Project, 1030 Main Street in Honesdale, and it begins at 7 o'clock. For more information, on the web, thecooperageproject.org, COOPERAGE. thecooperageproject.org. And for information about Keberle himself, he has a website, ryankeberle.com. ryankeberle.com, K-E-B-E-R-L-E. That's a night of Brazilian jazz featuring Ryan Keberle's Collective do Brasil this Friday, September 26th at the Cooperage Project, 1030 Main Street, in Honesdale at 7 o'clock. TheCooperageProject.org.